They told me I shouldn't give up so easily, and while we argued over going to the beach or not, a huge tree that was nearby caught my attention. It had a huge trunk and had brown color masts hanging from its branches. My cousin's wife noticed I was not paying attention anymore. I was captivated by this tree. "What kind of tree is that?" a Jabara from New York who knows not of these things asked them. "It's tamarind," they answered. I didn't know what tamarind was. This majestic tree had me mesmerized. It was located near the side of the 301 road. Behind it there was an estate with cattle but no houses nearby. Near this colossal tree was also a flamboyant tree. I felt a very peculiar attraction to that place, so I crossed the street. I didn't even notice when my cousin and his wife came up to me. The breeze was wonderful. My cousin's wife couldn't comprehend my fixation with the tree, and frankly neither could I. "Why don't you set up here?" she asked. I looked at them, and in an instant all my frustration and thoughts of giving up were gone. With a smile on my face I said, "Welcome to the Tamarindo Hot Dogs." They helped me set everything up. My first client arrived and I served the first hot dog with meat, onions and melted cheese. The day was a complete success. To this day I'm still here. The owner of the adjacent estate let me borrow a little of his land, and I hung a hammock between the trees. For now the whole UFO thing was buried. From my hammock I could see some mountains. Later I learned they're called Sierras Bumpies. I was happy, my business was booming, and I loved being able to mingle with nature every day. This neighborhood is known as Las Arenas. I met lots of good people and made lots of friends. Among them a family who treated me like one of their own. Papa, the head of the family, has always been there when I needed him. He even lets me leave my cart in his house so that I don't have to take it all the way back home every day. One day while talking to Edgardo, Popo's stepson, the UFO subject came up. We were talking about our childhoods and he told me an interesting story. When he was a child, and while at Mass on day, he saw through the church's windows a bizarre glowing object. It was like a ball of fire. He told the congregation what he was seeing. They told him that object in the sky was a work of Satan. After this they prayed with fervency. "Don't look at it," they told him, but as they bowed their heads and prayed he kept looking at that phenomenon in the sky. Because he told me this story with such honesty and in all seriousness, I felt comfortable enough to tell him what had happened to me that morning. In 1988, when I was through, to my surprise, he said he believed me. The next day I showed him and the rest of his family two of the pictures. I know some of them didn't know what to think and others simply couldn't accept it. Among the non-believers was Mr. Popo. Afterwards though, and by his own personal experience, he changed his mind. After my friend recommended it and after seeing that his family's reaction was not negative, I decided to exhibit the enlarged picture on my hot dog cart. I mistakenly thought that maybe someone would come up and tell me they'd seen the same object over the skies in Cabarrojo. Maybe even someone who had seen it that same morning. To the people who did inquire I didn't give details. I only told them I had taken the picture one day coming home late from work. The specifics were intense and too hard to believe. They would have required too many explanations from my part and I didn't want to complicate things. The enlarged picture of the UFO and the military plane did get some attention, but not the one I was hoping for. People started to make fun of me. They called me crazy and a liar. People got ketchup and mustard all over the picture. They all wanted to see it, but no one mentioned they had also seen it. They drove by and yelled obscenities and called me extraterrestrial or Martian. None of this was good for business. A few days after that I decided to just remove the picture and put it back in my bedroom drawer. The Drawer of Oblivion. Chapter 9. One morning when as usual I got up to get everything set up for my business, something really strange happened. My grandmother was chopping some onions that she would later cook, and I was cooking the meat on top of the stove. All of a sudden I left everything and went straight to my bedroom. From one of the drawers I took the envelope that had the pictures and the negatives. From another drawer I grabbed some tape, the kind used for moving boxes. Like a zombie, I went to the balcony where my dog, Christina, had her little wooden house. I taped the envelope to the inside of the roof of the dog house. Christina looked at me like, "What's wrong with him now?" I gave water as usual, put the tape back, and went back to the kitchen as if nothing had happened. Mama, who was still chopping onions, didn't notice anything. After finishing up, I headed to the Tamarindo. Later that afternoon, something happened that left me wondering for a long time about it. Mama was watching the television. I was putting in the refrigerator what was left over from work. I gave Mama a kiss and I asked her how her day went. She told me all had been well and that she'd left a plate for me on the stove. As I went into the kitchen, I heard footsteps coming from the back stairs. I got nervous. The house has two entrances, one solid one and one made out of wire that keeps the insects out. A man appeared at the second door. At first I thought he might be a Mormon, or Jehovah's Witnesses, or a salesman. Without opening the door, I asked him if there was something I could help him with. He then let himself in like it was nobody's business, along with three other men. Mama got scared and asked me who those men were. The first one wore a suit and tie and had sunglasses on. The other three wore more casual clothing. Mama again asked who were they, but they again ignored it. "Are you a Mori Reveritaro?" My answer was only yes. Their arrogance and authoritative attitude intimidated me. The one in a suit handed me some documents. Mama disregarded the news she was watching and got up. My hands were shaking as I took the documents. The heading on the first of these documents read CIA. While I was trying to read the documents, the man with the tie told me that it'd be best if I handed them the negatives. I looked at him, trying to conceal my nervousness. I told this man, who looked like the one in charge, that I didn't know what he was talking about. Mama started to say something, but I told her to be quiet with a look. After that, she told me that what she was going to say was to give them the negatives and avoid any further trouble. Mama didn't look well while all this was happening. I asked her to go downstairs with my aunt while I talked to these gentlemen. I called my cousin Danny and he came up and helped her down. As she left, she didn't look at the men or said a word. The man with the tie repeated his request. He also said that if I didn't hand them the negatives, they would have to search the house. I again told them I didn't know what they were talking about. I pretended to be reading the papers, but in all truth, their presence had me so shocked I could not read. On the second page, I only remember reading something about photographs and negatives. With my trembling hands, I gave the documents back to the man with the suit, who was the only one who talked. I couldn't see his eyes through the sunglasses, but I could feel the heavy stir. The others awaited his instructions. I then told them to feel free to search the house. I even remember going up to the television and turning it off. I don't know how they knew, but as soon as they were told to start the search, they first went to my room. Not only did they go directly to it, but also to the drawer where I had the photos and the negatives before I changed them. They looked confused when they didn't find them. They then opened every other drawer one by one. They were very meticulous. Once they opened a drawer and emptied it item by item, if they didn't find what they were looking for, they put everything back as they found it. In the same manner, they searched my entire room and the rest of the house. You could see they got frustrated. None of them spoke during the search. Even though I was extremely nervous, inside I was laughing. These people were so confused that it was actually funny. Their arrogance started to fade. For a moment, though, it wasn't funny when one of them went out to the balcony. I inhaled deeply and stopped breathing for a few seconds. He looked everywhere and approached the doghouse. Christina barked at him and went inside her little house. I saw everything from a window in a living room. The man came back inside and I could breathe again. One of them, who wore a guabara, took out a plastic bag from his pocket. He put in it all the photo negatives they found in the house. They were negatives of family activities like birthdays, weddings and baptisms. I don't know why they wanted those, since they had nothing to do with what they were looking for. They even removed the frames from the paintings in our house. Also, they looked inside every porcelain and plaster hoping to find those negatives. The search was executed very methodically, leaving everything where they'd found it. It wasn't like in the movies where agents shatter everything during a search. Every specific area they searched, they did so paying much attention to detail. The funniest part was when they opened the refrigerator and actually looked between some eggplant slices that my grandmother had left in there and that had started to go bad. I stayed put in the living room observing them and quiet. They in turn ignored me and didn't speak either. At a certain moment their behavior changed and it looked like they were about to give up. They searched the two rooms, the bathroom, the living room, and the kitchen. They were there the entire afternoon. When they finally gave up, they left without saying a word. As they went out the gate and got in their gray four-door car, pretty much my whole family was just arriving. Apparently my cousin Danny had alerted every member of the family in Carbirojo. Mama seemed like she had calmed down. When they all went in, they were puzzled. They expected to find the place thrashed, yet nothing looked out of place. We all gathered in the living and I told them what happened. They all wanted to speak and ask questions at the same time. It was as if we'd all gotten together for some holiday or something. It was like Thanksgiving but with no turkey. What most surprised everyone was that same morning I had thought of hiding the pictures in the doghouse. Again, everyone came up with their own theory for that. Some said that a spirit had alerted me, others that it had been my sixth sense, and yet others thought that the extraterrestrials were guiding me. Since we were all gathered together, I took the opportunity to tell them that from now on if anyone asked about the pictures or my whole experience, they were to tell them that it was all made up. I wanted to end everything once and for all. That same night I thought of destroying all the evidence, but instead I decided to send it to Japan to my brother Charlie and his wife. Junior, my oldest cousin, took the pictures and the negatives home with him. He later told me he couldn't sleep because he kept thinking that the CIA would come to this house. The men who came to my home identified themselves as CIA, but who's to know where they came from? The next day we went to a post office in a different town and Junior sent everything to Japan. We had already called my brother from a friend's house. We told him not to call us from his phone. We feared that if indeed those men were from CIA, our phones were probably tapped. Charlie knew this friend of ours, so it was enough to tell him, "Charlie, it's me. Don't ask any questions, just call me at Palito's, but don't use your phone." We hung up and he called back right away. I told him what had happened with those men who said they were from the CIA. We told him we would send him the package to the house of a friend of his wife. When he got the package, he immediately took it to a safety deposit box in a bank. He hid the key in a metal closet he had where he was stationed. After all this, when we talked on the phone and would talk about the pictures, we would refer to them as the baby. "How's the baby? Has anybody come asking about the baby?" My brother Charlie gave such good advice. It's really a shame I didn't listen to him. I think maybe things had to happen that way. Chapter 10. I still worked at the Tamarindo selling hot dogs. Little by little I started to make it look nice. I planted a few flowers and other plants and I took real good care of them. Weeks went by and I didn't get any unexpected visits. I tried to follow my brother's advice to forget about the whole thing, invest my time in more productive things, and to keep the experience to myself. I built a small garden at the Tamarindo. When I had no clients in the afternoon, I would lay on my hammock and enjoy the magnificent breeze and landscape. From there the hills looked beautiful. In that little garden I shared many wonderful moments with my family and friends. I was again able to bring in my subconscious the things related to issues not of this earth, though it was still what I thought about when I woke up. My brother and I stopped talking about the baby in our conversations and letters. My clientele increased considerably. I felt happy, but I couldn't smile as often as I did before. A few years went by without problems except for those common everyday life ones like paying the bills, my car breaking down, etc., everyday stuff. The worst, however, was yet to come. A being came to my life that would only bring about all kinds of trouble. With him my nightmares came back. Don't get me wrong, though, I'm not talking about an extraterrestrial. This was a totally egotistical individual, maybe out of personal frustrations or lack of attention. Because of people like him, it's not hard to get an idea of why things are the way they are in this world. Money sometimes has a supernatural power over some people. It's mesmerizing to see the things some people are willing to do in order to get it, even destroy other people's lives. One day I arrived at the Tamarindo and there was a large wine and grey colored car parked there. I started to set up as usual. I noticed that inside that old car was a man who stared at me like a vulture. His crazy eyes made me uncomfortable. I didn't want to turn my back to him, but I had to because of where he was parked. What did he want? Who was he? I kept thinking. While I was cooking the hot dogs, he got out of the car and approached me. I got nervous and felt uneasy. He had black hair, a wide face, tanned skin, and his body was enormous. His complexion was not good due to his obesity. He identified himself as an investigator of the UFO phenomenon. That damn word again, I thought to myself. He then formally introduced himself. For our purposes, we'll call him Mr. B. Mr. B told me he worked for a local magazine that covered that subject, among others. He said that word got to him that I'd had an encounter with extraterrestrial beings and that I even managed to take a picture of a ship beside a military plane. I didn't want to start this thing up again. I told Mr. B I knew nothing of the matter, Martians, or any pictures. By the way he was dressed, he didn't look like he worked for a magazine. From the moment he approached me with his beggar appearance, I didn't trust him. I even thought for a moment that he might be some CIA agent in disguise. He insisted on the pictures and my experience. Again I told him I knew nothing, that he was mistaken, and maybe looking for someone else. He started to get on my nerves. I even lost focus of what I was doing. He then got in his car and left. He had ruined my whole day. I spent most of it thinking about him. A few days after that, he came by again. This time he was more pressing. I asked to please leave me alone. He told me the name of the magazine he supposedly worked for. I doubted it even existed. I didn't know what to make of the things he told me. He said he was personally in contact with an extraterrestrial being called Kuznuk. Also, that he and some of his friends would do vigils and that they had managed to record some UFOs flying over their heads at really low altitudes. He added that he had hundreds of UFO photographs. He tried to gain my trust by telling me these absurdities. After harassing me the entire day, he left without the answer he was looking for. The next day I went to a newsstand to buy one of the local newspapers, El Vocero. Out of curiosity I looked for the magazine Mr. B had mentioned. I was surprised when I found it. On the cover was some strange creatures that looked like the one I saw. I was shocked. I bought both the magazine and the newspaper. When I got to the Tamarindo, I took the magazine and went through it until I found the section that listed all of its collaborators. The editor's name was Jorge Martin, and I also found out that in fact Mr. B was among the collaborators. I figured then that what he had told me was true. In the afternoon Mr. B came back to the Tamarindo. This time I heard him out. He brought with him others' copies of the magazine to try and convince me that what he was saying was true. He showed his name among the list of collaborators. I didn't mention that I'd already seen it. I heard him out but didn't give him any information. I repeat, I didn't trust Mr. B. Among the many stupid things that Mr. B wanted from me, he said he wanted me to admit that I'd taken the pictures with the UFO and military plane. He also said that Jorge Martin wanted to interview me, that every day when I got to the Tamarindo I should raise my arms and facing the Sierra's bumpers I should say everything for others, that demons were after him and that the devil wanted him to form a new religion, that he and his wife saw human shadows on the doors of their home. The things he was telling me were a blend between E.T. and The Exorcist. The things he said were scary, but what he drew on the ground were terrifying. He tried very hard to get me to admit my encounter. I couldn't get rid of him. I didn't want to meet Mr. Martin. That's all I needed, two lunatics, people talking crazy. I judged Mr. Martin without knowing him, a grave mistake on my part. The thing was that if Mr. B represented that magazine, then I simply wasn't interested. In time I met Mr. Martin and it turns out he is the complete opposite of Mr. B. I met him because of a strange dream I had. I know it sounds weird, but that is how it happened, and so that's how I'll write. A little heads up, from now on things start to get even stranger. The dream went like this: I found myself in the Tamarindo. It was night and my hot dog cart was nowhere to be found. With me was a local dog named Flarka. I was feeding her with pieces of hot dogs. I saw a man standing in the darkness below one of the trees. He approached and I noticed he was dressed in black. He was about my height and had shoulder-length hair. He wore it back, like an Indian. I didn't remember feeling scared. This young-looking man said, "Send the pictures to Jorge Martin, the one from the magazine." After he spoke, I suddenly woke up. It was so real, and I knew I met that man before, but I couldn't place him. The pictures, I thought. Sure enough, he was the same person as in the photographs. He wore the same clothes. I had never dreamt about him, only about the beings with the fetal heads. That night, after going over it thoroughly, I concluded that my subconscious created that dream because of Mr. B's constant harassment about the pictures and him wanting me to talk to Mr. Martin. I constantly asked myself who that man next to me and one of those little men was. Had he been also kidnapped by the big-headed creatures? I couldn't sleep. I banged my head thinking about that all through the night. I decided to do then just that: send the pictures to that editor. I interpreted the dream as my subconscious telling me what to do. I asked my father to send me some of the copies I'd sent him. He recommended I didn't mess with those people from the magazine, that it would only cause me trouble. He also reminded me of what had happened with the CIA. I didn't mention the dream to my father because I knew he would say it was an act of the devil. I didn't pay attention to his good advice and I sent the pictures anonymously to Jorge Martin. Along with the pictures, that included the enlarged one I had exhibited in the Tamarindo, I added a note explaining the circumstances in which they were taken. Mr. Martin was astonished when he saw the pictures. In his next visit, Mr. B mentioned that they had received an envelope and described its contents. I acted as though I was totally uninterested in what he was saying. Then Mr. B asked something that left me speechless: "Did you send them?" I told him that it wasn't me and that he was being ridiculous. He wasn't satisfied, so he kept digging. Again I begged him to leave me alone. That day he was irritated when he left, and the next time he came around was strictly as a client, so I therefore treated him with the same courtesy and friendliness I treat all of my clients. I found it strange he didn't bring up the subject. The next couple of days he only drove by and waved. He looked at me anxiously but did not stop his car. He couldn't resist for long though, so again one day he stopped. He again mentioned the subject and that the editor wanted to meet me. There were other clients at the time and I felt a little embarrassed. I didn't like the matter being discussed in front of them. Mr. B kept talking about flying saucers and asking me to accept his offers. He insisted I talk to the editor. To get rid of him, I agreed to talk to Mr. Martin. After hearing this, he got in his car and took off as if 1,000 demons were after him. The people asked me who this maniac was. They said he looked mentally unstable and dangerous. By the time I got home that afternoon, I was already regretting telling Mr. B about meeting the editor. When I told everyone at home, they advised me not to do it. They said that by accepting to meet with the people from the magazine, I would imply that indeed I was the person they were looking for. I really didn't know what to do. On the one hand, I wanted to talk to someone who had knowledge on the subject, but on the other hand, I didn't want to know anything. I thought that maybe it couldn't hurt to talk to this person. I'd hear him out, but I didn't necessarily have to admit that I was the one who sent the pictures. Besides, it was a good opportunity to ask him to tell Mr. B to please leave me alone. It was a Saturday or a Sunday when Mr. Martin came by the Tamarindo. Mr. B was not with him. He came alone. When he got out of the car, I thought he was a client, so I asked him if he wanted a hot dog. He held out his hand and introduced himself. He asked if I was Amori, the one with the pictures. Not knowing why, I said yes. Again, not knowing the reason, right there in front of my cart, I told him about my experience. I got nervous and my knees started to tremble. I even had to grab onto cart's umbrella. I could barely contain the tears. Inevitable, I started to cry when I finally told him that I couldn't escape my nightmare after all. I couldn't deny it anymore. My mental stability was slowly leaving me like sand running through fingers. At the same time, I felt great relief while talking to Mr. Martin. It's not the same when you tell your family about your illness than when you tell it to the doctor. They wouldn't have an answer, the doctor would. I made a mistake in judging Mr. Martin based on Mr. B's behavior. They were totally different. He turned out to be a very formal and serious person in the research of the UFO phenomenon. He only searches for the truth. He knew how to listen and understand my feelings regarding my experience. He didn't speak of contradictory absurdities like his friend. He heard everything I had to say without interrupting me. After I had finished, he explained that B had studied various cases involving the lost time factor. He said not to worry, that when the time was right, I'd remember what had happened during that apparent void. According to him, I was not crazy. There were hundreds of thousands of people in the world who had gone through the same thing. He said that in Puerto Rico alone there were hundreds of cases. He assured me that, if I was willing, he could put me in touch with some of these people. I told him that at the moment I didn't feel prepared for that. I asked him to please keep the information confidential. I didn't want the matter going public in his magazine or any other media. He agreed. I also explained the current situation with his friend and his harassing behavior. Mr. Martin explained that he didn't really work for the magazine and wasn't even on the payroll. He was simply a collaborator and his job consisted merely of gathering information regarding the west side of Puerto Rico. He was one of many that helped in getting in touch with people who have had experiences related to the phenomenon. Either way, I still asked him if he could talk to Mr. B so that he'd quit following me around. He promised he would do so. We agreed to stay in touch, but I didn't give him my number. I told him I'd call if I wanted to talk. When he left, I felt the sensation that a great friendship had commenced. I'm sure Martin spoke to Mr. B, but now he hassled me more than ever. It bothered me to go to work knowing that he might show up and try to get more information. He followed me everywhere, the supermarket, the beach, the car mechanic, through every street and everywhere I went. He'd become a huge threatening shadow. I came to the conclusion that his obsession was based on the money he wanted to make off of my pictures. I realized this after he started to talk about their worth. He had 1,000 ideas for them. Every time he mentioned the potential gains, his eyes got wider. He'd totally lost sight of the objective of Jorge Martin's investigation. I talked to the editor again, and on multiple occasions after, about his friend harassing and poor professional behavior. I never told him about his friend's real objectives and the repeated mentions of the monetary value of the pictures after being analyzed by experts. My brother Charlie and I started to talk about the baby again. We talked about the fact that there were copies of my pictures going around already. But that what the CIA was after were the negatives. So when I told him that I needed to have the baby examined by doctors, he opposed. He reminded me of what happened to people who possessed this sort of graphic evidence. I told him that Mr. Martin was a very serious person and that he had promised to protect me in case anything happened. Also that I wouldn't hand over the baby without having everything on paper first. He said I should still think about, and also mentioned he felt that I should back out while there was still time. He reminded me of our grandmother's health and that she wouldn't survive another stressful event. The nightmares came back, and even stronger. Starting to talk about everything again brought them back. I again started to try and remember what had happened during that lost time. I was always distracted at work and on top of that had other new problems. Though Mr. Martin had kept his word regarding the confidentiality of the whole matter, it was not the case with Mr. B. We had agreed that if the case was mentioned at any time, my identity would not be revealed. It could be discussed and analyzed, yet no information regarding my identity, place of work, or home would be provided. There were people who came to the Tamarindo asking questions and commenting on matters I hadn't discussed with the general public. When I asked these people where they lived, the majority said they lived in the same neighborhood as Mr. B. This wasn't just a coincidence. Mr. B started to bring different people to my home to meet me. Word got out and people started to park outside my home and sit on their cars to watch the sky and our house. This was intolerable.